Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You are more than welcome to ring in during the show to ask questions or make comments. There are abundance of support and services available through our organization, Toward the Light. One of these days, they'll figure out how to say that. Let's start again. There's an abundance of services and support available to our organization, Toward the Light, not the least of which is this radio program that is broadcast every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. We'd like to encourage you to support the organization and this radio show by making a loving contribution and donation. For more information, please visit our website, towardthelight.org, and our media website, which is towardthelight.info. This week, I'm very pleased to have a fellow BBS radio host who is the host of Spiritual Hollywood. She happens to be a fellow near-death experiencer and also does healing. She's a writer. She's a talented individual and also runs a management company for people in the film industry. Welcome to Toward the Light, Katie Romero. Hello, Katie.
Hello, Juliet. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I do appreciate your inviting me because I believe the audiences inside of us and collective consciousness discovers what it is that they need to hear, and then they put it on our hearts, and then we say it on the airwaves, and everybody gets served.
Well, that's exactly what's been the case with me, because I don't take notes or do outlines or anything. I just channel, basically, or whatever comes from the heart is what comes out.
And absolutely.
It's really, really wonderful. So let's start, Katie. You do an abundance of incredible work, for sure, but you have had a near-death experience. Have you had one or more than one?
I could say one and a half.
Okay.
I had one definite one when I was 19 in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I just got back from Sedona early this morning and passed by very nearby where that happened, ironically enough. And I was pronounced dead on the scene for 12 minutes.
Wow. Okay. And you said that this was a motor car accident, correct?
Yes, it was. We were riding in a van and it rolled down a cliff 11 times to the bottom of a canyon.
Ooh, yikes.
Yes. No seatbelts.
No seatbelts.
No, not way back when.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually experienced mixed reviews about seatbelts because sometimes they can hold you in when you would have been better off not being tied in.
Yes, in this particular case, I didn't get injured from not having the seatbelt on so much as I banged my head, which I probably would have done in a seatbelt anyway.
Yes.
But the thing about not having on the seatbelt allowed me to sort of be like floating in midair as the van was plummeting towards the canyon bottom, and as it was rolling over and over and over, I was suspended in space, kind of in the middle of the van, just sort of not having time to fall in any particular direction. So I found that interesting.
Yes.
And when the van landed on the canyon floor, that's when I hit my head. So I don't even know what I hit my head on. I just know I had a big goose egg on my head.
Goodness me. And so naturally you were stuck unconscious. So do you have memories of your near-death experience?
I do. If you want to go right into that, we can. But I'm gonna leave myself open for a second to see where you're feeling led to go with this. And if you want to go right into that, I'm prepared to do that. But I sense there's something else first.
Well, I do like to have people share their experiences because very powerful messages do ensue as a result of having an NDE. So feel free to describe a bit about your near-death experience.
I will. And I'd like to also let our listeners know that you've been having internet meltdowns and I've been having internet meltdowns. And I sense, as goofy as this might sound to some, but if you're listening to BBS Radio, it won't sound goofy at all. is that when spirits are around us, they try to get our attention by messing with our electronic equipment. So I'm thinking as this radio show was coming closer and closer to the time for it to air, the more issues I had with my internet to the point now where I don't have internet at all.
Nor do I.
It's the same situation. So I can't help but have part of me wonder if it has something to do with our conversation. So having said that, I'm now feeling like I'm ready to tell you about the near-death experience.
Sure.
What happened was, I think it was about 32 years ago, when I was 19, do the math, I'll be 52 in April, I was riding in a van with my boyfriend at that time, who was the love of my life, my first love, and he had done some things that caused our relationship to end, and we went out to dinner that night. He wanted to take me out and apologize, said I was the perfect girlfriend. He didn't know why he was doing all the things he was doing. He just couldn't seem to help himself, and he just wanted me to know that he cared about me deeply, and he just knew he wasn't ready for the kind of relationship that I was offering him. And I understood as best I could. And we had a couple of pina coladas, and we were playing pool and foosball and things like that and enjoying ourselves in what seemed like it would be our last time together. And on the way back to drop me off at my home, we were in a place in Cave Creek, which is windy, windy roads and canyons just past Scottsdale. It's way out there. And we were coming back after having some pina coladas, and he was like reaching over and playing with me, poking me in the arm, and I poked him back, and then he poked me back, and I poked him back. Then he dropped something, and he reached down on the floorboard to pick it up, and when he did that, the steering wheel got pulled with him, and we went over the cliff. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't even know what happened. All of a sudden, I'm just sort of spinning in the middle of the van as it's rolling and rolling and rolling. And I don't know about other people so much, but I know when I get incredibly nervous or excited, I tend to giggle. And I couldn't stop laughing. And I remember laughing. I just couldn't believe that this was actually happening. It wasn't in the script. I didn't get the memo that this was going to happen. I was shocked beyond belief that here we are rolling down a cliff. And I was kind of enjoying that place of spinning around inside the van. And just like I said, probably a little bit in shock and a little tipsy too, and just wondering how could something so crazy happen. And when we hit the bottom, the van landed on its side, and I was not struck unconscious. I hit my head very, very hard, but I wasn't unconscious. And I had a flashback from high school when you see those, at least in the United States, they show those movies where to driver's education students, where if you get in a car accident, you need to get out of the car as fast as you can because it might blow up. And all I could think of when I hit the canyon floor was saying, we've got to get out of here. It's going to blow up. It's going to blow up. And then the boyfriend of the time, his name was Ronnie, and he said, oh, my God, we're going to blow up? I said, yeah. They said in high school that this is what happens when this happens. We're going to blow up. So he stood up from the side of the van, and the door was kind of smashed in, and he, with one blow of his powerful arm, he hit that door, and it flew off like a frisbee. And I scampered out of there and just clawed my way up the cliff, which was very, very far, and I kept looking back down at the van. It was a full moon night, and going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, we fell down there? Oh, my gosh, and I kept climbing and climbing and climbing up the side of the cliff with my fingernails because it was so steep. And I got up to the side of the road, and I looked down at the van, and I know I was in shock. I'm certain of it because of the state of mind I was in was just not rational. And I was laughing, and I'm thinking, how come I'm not dead? How come I'm not dead after that? And I thought, well, maybe I am dead. And so I laid down by the side of the road, and I crossed my legs, and I crossed my arms over my chest, and I laid down, and I looked up at the stars, and I just remember stopping my breathing, stopping my heart, until the next thing I knew, I was having my shirt ripped open, and a whole crew of paramedics and fire trucks and ambulance and neighbors out in their pajamas all over the place. They were doing cardiopulmonary resuscitation on me. And I remember that I was floating about 20 to 25 feet above the incident, and I saw my boyfriend Ronnie laying over my body as much as he could while they were working on me, just saying that he called me Whammy for some reason, probably because I had a world title in arm wrestling and nobody could beat me, and he called me Whammy because of that, and it was just a cute nickname. So he just kept saying, I love you, Whammy, please don't leave me, don't go, don't leave me. And I'm feeling emotional remembering it because it was...
Oh, sure.
Because all I wanted was him to love me. That's all I ever wanted. And here I am above the incident, the scene, watching them work on me, and it's like I had very long hair down to my behind, like I still do, and it was floating out around me as if I were underwater. You know how when you're underwater,
oh,
your hair floats
yes.
out all around you?
Yes.
So that was floating out all around me. And I remember feeling so much serenity and peace and calm and just absolute serenity that I thought, wow, why is everybody so upset? Why is everybody, you know, so excited down there? This is wonderful. I don't feel bad at all. I'm not hurting. I'm feeling wonderful. This is great. You don't have to work so hard. It's really good. I don't even care if I come back. Please, just know I'm okay up here. And they couldn't hear me, of course, and didn't even know I was there. And but I certainly saw everything. And there was this young rookie paramedic, his first call, and he was sitting on the back of a truck, number 33, and he was sitting there with a pencil trying to write down the stats as they were calling him out to him about what my stats were, my respiration, my pulse, my heartbeat, all of that, and they just kept saying that I was flatlining, and they were filling me with epinephrine and all kinds of injections and IVs and, you know, working on me, trying to bring me back, and I remember thinking, I chose to be here, I chose to go, you know, I didn't see any point in staying. I didn't feel like I was loved in my life. I had come from a very traumatic childhood. I was born spiritually wide awake as an indigo to an atheist family. So, you know, if you can think what that must have been like, I really didn't feel accepted or that I fit in anywhere. So it was really okay for me to just check out. And I felt that my boyfriend would never love me, and he's the only one I'd ever loved at age 19. So I just was chilling out, just hanging out up there and in that in-between place. And I saw this rookie with his pencil trying to write down the stats, trying to write everything down to get my name right. And I watched him. And I watched him drop his pencil, and I watched it roll underneath the seat in the back of the truck and wedge itself there. And he panicked, and he's looking around everywhere. And then he found a pen inside of his jacket and started writing again. And I remember... This is funny because I saw an elderly couple out in Scottsdale. It's a retirement area, and lots of nice homes out there where we rolled the van down to the canyon bottom. And I saw this one couple, so cute, in flannel Curious George pajamas. It was February, and it was quite cold out. And they had on flannel Curious George pajamas while they're out there with their hands over their mouths and just praying that I would come back and that they could save me. I said, oh, what a sweet little girl. Oh, I hope she's going to be okay and all this. And I saw them really caring about me. Well, when I saw that, little did I know until recently when I bought a pair of Curious George flannel pajamas that I was actually shopping when I was dead.
Wow.
I was shopping when in that place. I was thinking, I want a pair of pajamas like that. And so long story short, they finally give up on it and just pronounce me dead on the scene at the time that it was, and they put me on the gurney, covered me up. My boyfriend asked if he could ride in the back of the ambulance with me, and they said yes, they didn't see that would be a problem, so he was put back there with me, and my head was covered up. I was fastened in, and I remember as I was starting to be pulled back towards my body that he was laying over me, saying, please come back. I love you so much. I love you more than I've ever loved anybody, and I'll never stop loving you. Please come back. Please don't go. And something in me just said, Okay, well, we'll see. I'll give you another chance. I'm not kidding. And just that quick, I entered my body again with such a hard crash that it hurt worse than the van crashing. It was the hardest thing to be put back in my body. It hurt so much. And all I could do when I got back in my body was to say under the sheets, oh, my head hurts. My head hurts. And I heard Ronnie just absolutely, I heard him sit upright and scream and pound on the window for the paramedics to pull over and said, she's back, she's back, she's back. And they all got out and came back and checked me out and called the hospital and said, you know, that my respiration was this and my heart rate was this and I seemed to be completely back and that they were bringing me in and to prepare something, whatever that was, they were supposed to prepare for me to get there. And when I got to the hospital, they kept me there for 3 days observation because they could not understand or figure out what happened, of why I had died in the first place and what it was that brought me back. But
because it was actually after you climbed up the canyon wall that your body just expired, correct?
Yeah, yes. I thought I should be dead. So I laid down and died.
And then it happened. Now, this is very interesting. Was this in 75 or 76?
Whenever I was 19, which was 32 years ago. So it's probably, could be 75. No,
okay. The reason I'm asking this is very interesting, is that my huge NDE happened likewise in February. I flatlined on my birthday in February.
Oh, mine was in February.
And I heard you say that, and I heard you say roughly 32. Well, this February, this second February, will, for me, have been 32 years. Right
yeah.
now, I'm still at 31 years. So I think, how auspicious, how aligned
that really
we
is.
Are in so many ways.
Yeah, that really is.
I was in my 30s when that happened. But this is a very powerful experience that you had. So he pleaded, and that's often what happens is when someone pleads.
Yes. I heard him.
Yeah.
And I loved him so much, I just said, okay, I will give you another chance. And it was a conscious choice to leave. It was a conscious choice to come back. That is one of the biggest things that changed my life because I understood the power that I have.
Yes.
To come or go. I understood completely that there's no mystery on the other side anymore. It's beautiful. And there's nothing to fear. So I went gangbusters into my spiritual journey as soon as I came back from that. And after a few days, you know, Ronnie was just loving me and loving me and loving me. And then he went back to his old ways, and I simply packed up everything I had and moved from Phoenix, where we lived, to San Diego while he was away on vacation. And when he came home, I was gone, and I started my life. So I was able to stop being codependent and enabling to him because I saw that we really have one chance in this physical body, and I knew that what had happened to me was a gift that I got to come back because I had chosen to leave. And I know that if I really wanted to, I could do that any time, but I don't want to. I want to help others learn how to live. I want to help others remember who they really are, which is pure God essence. And when I was in that in-between place, I was absolutely pure source, pure
yeah.
source.
And you can feel that, too. You know it. It's not a hypothesis anymore.
Yes, and while I was on the vortex in Sedona yesterday afternoon, my boyfriend and I were up there on the rock praying, and when we prayed, I remembered that sensation of being in that in-between place. I felt it again, and I was intoxicated from the energy and from the vibration and frequency of invoking God in me on that wonderful vortex that we were sitting on. And we all, you know, it doesn't take a vortex to get there, but it was such a high-frequency place that I tapped right into it, and I matched the frequency.
Yeah.
And that's what happens on a vortex. You match your frequency to that high energy, and it raises your frequency, and it's not temporary, it's permanent. So going on a vortex is a very powerful thing to do. So I went into that in-between place. I could liken it to just an amazing vortex. And so after I recovered, before I left my boyfriend, a few days after I was out of the hospital, I still had a big bruise on my head, he drove me to the paramedics in Scottsdale, and took me in to talk to the captain because I was just haunted by wanting to tell them what my experience was, and I wanted to meet the young rookie. And so he happened to be there, and I told him, I said, I saw you writing with a pencil, and I saw you get frustrated and panic a little because you dropped your pencil and you couldn't find it again. If you have truck 33 out there, I will show you where your pencil is. So the captain said, come on, let's go. And truck 33 was out there. And the reason 33 is significant is because I was born at 3:33 in the morning, and I believe that I died at 3:33 in the morning on this occasion.
That's very interesting, too. And then you got back home roughly at 3 o'clock this morning. I'm seeing the number 3 show up a lot. So
yes, well, 3 is the Trinity. It's the Trinity. Christ was 30 when he was crucified. It was on March 3rd, which is 3:33 at 3 o'clock in the evening. Then you've got the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. That's 3. So there's 3 is very significant, at least for me. There have been some channelers and psychics who said I'm the chosen one, and I just kind of giggle at that because I don't think I'm more important than anybody. But I do have a absolute passion that is insatiable to raise consciousness any way that I can. And the best way for me to do that is to be the change that I want to see in the world. So before I digress too much, I want to get back to what happened with the rookie at the paramedic station. I took him out to truck 33. He opened up the door without hesitation. I reached in. I went straight to the pencil. I dislodged it from the place it was wedged, and I pulled it out, and I said, were you looking for this? He turned as white as a ghost.
Yes.
And I handed it to him. And the captain said, I think it's very interesting that you knew it was truck 33. I said, well, I saw it clear as day. And he said, I really appreciate that you came out here and shared this with us, but I really also want to tell you, we can't even count the amount of times this happens, where they work on somebody who passed, and they come back, and then they come to the paramedic station to thank everybody for helping them, and then tell them what they saw, which was oftentimes what the paramedics were doing to bring them back. So everything they did to resuscitate me actually did help. It just had a little bit of a delayed reaction because of my free will.
You know, this is a really interesting point, too, and I just wrote about this in the most recent article that I posted on my blog, and that is, proving the fact that consciousness exists outside of the physical brain, because the brain is not the source of consciousness, nor is it really about our sight or our ability to hear. We are conscious beings who are fully intact even though our bodies expire.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really, really good point to make, and I'm so pleased because telepathically I was asking you, if you did share with the rookie what happened, what you observed. And, these are really, really good points because, once again, we are proving the fact that even though the body is totally out of commission, that you are still conscious, you are still seeing, you are still hearing, you are still witnessing, you are still doing things.
Yes, we are not our bodies.
Indeed we are not. And
yes,
that's the whole point. And, unlike you, I was sent back to do this work. I did not want to come back to this plane one iota. And in fact, I experienced the deepest broken heart I ever had in my life when I was told that I had to come back to this plane because I did not want to come back to this
plane. It's a lovely place where we're sent, isn't it?
Oh, it's just...
It's divine.
Oh, absolutely.
Literally.
Yes, it is.
Because we're brought straight back to our divinity.
And the unconditional love, it is something that you know it and you can never describe it.
Absolutely, and you never forget it.
Oh, absolutely.
You never forget it. I became a non-denominational ordained minister a few years ago because I wanted to be able to honor this feeling I was having inside, and that was the best way I could get to it. So I can now perform marriages, and I've done 44 of those. And what I do, my favorite thing to do is marry people to their true nature.
Very good.
I take them up on a mountaintop, and I actually do automatic writing just for them, just for their spirit. My spirit connects to their spirit, and I write a wonderful ceremony for them that they, being people of integrity, will honor and keep sacred for all of the rest of their natural lives, to honor, respect, forgive, accept, and love themselves for the rest of their lives. And when they make that commitment, they're different people when they come down off that mountain. And I give them a marriage certificate and the whole thing. And I developed that because I went there and I experienced it. And it's beautiful. And people don't have to leave their physical body to get back to their divinity. And that's another reason why I co-created quantum hypnotherapy, which is under hypnosis, we reach the client through their conscious mind, their subconscious mind, and their superconscious mind, which is, you know, the God mind, where all possibility lives. And they don't have a chance to escape their divinity, even if they wanted to, when approaching them from all these three sources. And it's nothing short of incredible. We've done 156 sessions, and each one is just incredibly successful, and we don't even advertise. We just do our sessions by referral. We make house calls because that's where the person's energy is, and we see them around 8:30 in the evening, and after we finish the session, they have the best sleep of their lifetime. And in their sleep, in their subconscious mind is still working, and when they awake the next morning, they are completely returned to their peaceful center.
So you work with somebody else doing this, obviously.
A hypnotherapist, yes.
Okay.
And I have a website for that if someone wants to explore it.
Please feel free to share it, love, by all means.
Okay, www.quantum, Q-U-A-N-T-U-M, hypnotherapy, T-H-E-R-A-P-Y, the number 2.com. quantumhypnotherapy2.com. It's the number 2. quantumhypnotherapy2.com. And we were just asked recently, after working with a billionaire who's been referring us to all kinds of other people in his stratosphere, and what's so thrilling about working with someone on that level is people with lots of money like that have a lot of power in the world. And when you raise consciousness in that kind of a stratosphere, then you're really making a difference for the movers and the shakers who are going to use their money differently to raise consciousness also. So we worked with an 83-year-old billionaire and restored him completely to his true nature and his divinity. And he went from giving up on life, just stooped over, not standing up straight, having no energy in his voice, speaking of himself in the third person, to a man who owns his power. He stands tall and erect. He's 6'3". He stands like he's a soldier in the military, with his shoulders back and his head held high. He's got vitality when he speaks. His eyes are sparkling. They look like headlights. And he's happier than he's ever been in his life from this session. So he told the people over at the Wellness Center in Palm Springs at the wonderful resort there called La Quinta about us. And now we've been invited to come every weekend to Palm Springs and be on their staff to give quantum hypnotherapy sessions to their clients who aren't responding to their wellness treatments.
And that's California, correct?
Yes, it's California.
Okay.
Yes. Got to remember, this is global.
This is international.
Yes.
And being that I'm from another country, I'm always thinking international.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But, but that's just such a high honor, you know, because this work is speaking for itself, and I don't like to call it work. It's actually play. We have so much fun watching somebody wake up. Just watch them step into the body. It's very, every time we do it, it's very much like when I came back into my body.
Mm-hmm.
It hurt when I came back into my body, but the way we work with our clients is it's the most beautiful birthing that you could ever imagine. We're basically reparenting our clients because Alex being male and my being female, we have the yin and yang of the male and female, and it's a definite reparenting, rebirthing for every person that we work with. And, you know, we for people who are really, really suffering and really want their life back, and if they can't afford it, we find a way to work with them and make sure that they get what they need, because it's not about money, but money is energy and it circulates. And in order to, receiving is the highest form of generosity that you can possibly have. Giving is easy. But receiving reciprocal monetary benefit for this work that we're doing is part of the cycle of the rebirthing, if that makes any sense.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
Because, you know, we did probably 50 sessions at no charge for people because we just loved doing it and it gave us so much vitality. And you know yourself, Juliet, when you're doing your purpose, living your purpose, doing what you love, you just have energy and vitality from it. You could do it all day. It never makes you tired. it just lights you up and just, you know, puts wind in your sails.
That's so true. That is absolutely true. And I work so many hours, most of it for no money at all. I just do a labor of love. But it brings such joy.
Of course. And being of service is the highest form of our true nature that we can be. And anytime we're being of service, the universe supports us and just takes care of all of our physical needs like clockwork, like gravity.
Indeed.
Now, you find that all yours is provided for, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
And now something I wanted to ask you is, do you feel that your near-death experience kind of catapulted you into this work, healing work?
No question. No question.
Okay.
It gave me this feeling. Either get busy living or get busy dying, and I chose to live.
Did you find that it also was a validation for what you already knew
spiritually?
Totally.
Totally. Well, I was born indigo. I was born spiritually wide awake. I knew where I came from. I remember sitting around the table with the elders before my birth, planning out every single incident that will happen in my lifetime, including this radio show, including connecting with you. Every single detail. I chose pre-birth.
Well, I also remember when I was born that recognizing that this wasn't my home, this wasn't really me, but I was so aware of another place. I've always been awake, and it's very interesting to compare notes this way. I find it rather exciting and very inspiring. Hopefully it is inspiring for a number of people who are listening and maybe helping them to have more confidence about their own experiences and awareness, because a lot of people are still questioning themselves.
Oh, yes. And that, to me, to question your divinity and the essence of God that you are, if there is such a thing as sin, which is a archery term meaning missing one's mark, that's what the word sin means.
Mm-hmm.
If there is such a thing as sin, that would be it, to forget who we really are. Because to not know the God that we are within, to not recognize that, recognize that, meaning going back and remembering where we came from, is not allowing God in your life. If you can't recognize the God in yourself, then you can't let God into your life. And you can go to church all you want to, but if you're not recognizing the God in you, then you're just going to church to be in a place that's not your home.
And it's basically just a mind manipulation
totally.
That goes on with
totally.
That.
Totally. And the best way you can honor God is to honor the God in yourself.
Exactly. And this, you know, this is a very good point because, again, so many people are questioning, but I'm really excited by the fact that people are asking questions. People are waking up. And, you know, the fact that millions of us at this point, millions of NDEs have been sent back to share something really, really important, very, very significant, and that is the fact that we are divine, number one, and number two, we do live forever. Well, how could we not live forever if we're divine?
Yes, energy cannot be destroyed. It just simply changes form.
Absolutely, and this is something I write about and speak about all the time, so thank you for repeating that, because I don't think people can hear that enough at this point.
Yes, and it depends on who they're listening to. They can hear something all their life and then all of a sudden hear you say it and go, oh, she said it in such a way that it finally got in.
Yes.
No, even a little child in the grocery store can say something to his or her mother and you can hear it and you'll go, oh, I finally get it.
Yes.
You know, because children, you know, they're closer to source because they're fresh.
Exactly.
They're recent, you know, the recent spirits. But I believe we have near-death experiences so that those of us who doubted our purpose are shown unequivocally what it really is. So we're given these opportunities to see our power and to finally own it and step into it, and therefore before we were born, we were appointed to be spiritual leaders. And, you know, it doesn't matter how insignificant you think your work might be, anyone listening, even if you're a dry cleaner or a barista at a coffee shop or you make doilies, it doesn't matter. If you're providing a service that brings people comfort and makes their life easier, then you are totally having a ministry right where you are without having to go anywhere or do anything else. All you have to do is get present to the fact that you are being of service and make that the reason you're doing what it is that you're doing. And when you shift your consciousness from doing drudgery to being of service, the universe shows up to support it every time.
And there's so much about the smile and the love that comes from a person mm-hmm. who is doing that kind of work as well. So
yes.
Indeed, it's not insignificant at all. And
no.
That's a very good point. I appreciate you making that.
Yes, and the light in somebody's eyes is wealth beyond reason.
Oh, it's amazing. In fact, I was thinking about somebody who had said a few years ago, he's now transitioned, and he was saying to me, it doesn't cost anything to say hello.
Right.
And it really doesn't. And I have noticed in certain areas where people are so grumpy and they refuse to say hello and they're very miserable. And I thought, blimey, it doesn't cost anything just to nod or say hello.
They know that. They know that already, but they've lost touch of the God inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the reason they don't. And when somebody is really present to the God that they are, they're the ones saying hello and greeting you and giving you a smile and letting you see the sparkle and the twinkle in their eye when they make eye contact with you.
Well, so, let's talk about this a little bit, too, because a lot of people, and, you know, I'm a minister, too, but I'm not a Christian minister, and I don't resonate with Christian theology. Or
nor do I.
And a lot of these people and people who are into religion tend to feel that it is blasphemous that they regard themselves as divine or one with force,
right.
What have you.
Yes.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Absolutely. My son's father is a born-again Christian, and I'm not saying anything bad about the born-again Christian, but I will observe this, and this is my opinion and just my opinion, and because we all are entitled to our opinions, I will state my opinion. My opinion is that when you tell somebody that they are not divine and they have no right to say that they are divinity, because I told my son's father, he called me and he says, how are you? And I said, I'm just expanding my divinity. He said, you're not divine. How dare you say you're divine? Nobody is divine. Only God is divine. And I said, well, until you recognize the divinity in yourself, you don't even know God.
Good girl.
And he hung up on me.
Wow.
And that was fine. But I got to say how I felt, and I was hurt beyond belief that he would tell me I'm not divine.
And notice their sadness. Notice their anger. Notice their grief. In fact, I had recently found a comment that somebody left on my blog when I had addressed hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me a liar, and I thought, oh, that's lovely, you know, mm-hmm. How do you know? And I noted how very miserable this poor soul was.
Right.
Well, I did leave a comment with him that was very loving and kind, and then I thought, you know, this whole thing is very negative, so I removed his comment, but I just thought, consider the source. Do you want to be miserable and full of fear and full of anger and full of woe? Then follow this person's example.
Yes, and if I may interject something, Juliet, I have an acronym for the word Satan. I have a theory that Satan, the meaning of Satan, is seeing all things as negative.
Very good.
And if you just simply wrote back to that person, S-A-T-A-N, seeing all things as negative, that would have been very powerful. So,
very good. And yes, I don't even believe in Satan, but
I don't either. But
that's a wonderful metaphor. Wow.
Well, yes, it's a great acronym because that's all Satan is, seeing all things as negative.
Well, as a matter of fact, he used the word Satan too, and I just had to grin.
Of course. So Satan is seeing all things as negative. And I sent out a memo when I got that acronym, when it came to me, Spirit gave it to me, and I thought, oh, I'm so excited by this, I have to share it. So I sent it to a few of my friends, and one of my friends said, thank you for sharing, but that's just a little too rich for my blood. I don't tend to see things the way you do. And I wrote back, seeing all things as negative.
Oh, wow.
She didn't like it because she saw things as negative, all things.
Yes.
So she saw that as negative, and then she caught herself doing it and wrote back and apologized.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful. That's
yes.
That's really, really good. Because
mm-hmm.
Another point that I make out, you know, is that when people, you know, they say, oh, we're not God only, we're not divine only God is, and I'm saying, well, we're never separate from God.
Right.
How could we be?
Yeah.
The ego perceives separateness.
Yes.
But that's the illusion. That's the hologram we're experiencing as the physical plane right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful thing about the near-death experiences and spiritually transformative experiences is that they remind us of this love, of this total at-one-ment and connectedness at all times with Source. And it's just, again, I can't describe it, but I get choked up and in tears most of the time, too, when I think about this, just thinking about it. And it's wonderful to draw upon, because when we've been there, and I like to use the word grok it, we can totally grok it, what it is. And, you know, we move beyond hypothesis now. We are speaking from experience. And that is very, very powerful in and of itself. So tell us some of the work that I know that you're doing, the healing work, and I do that too as a minister. I'm more of a chaplain counselor type of minister, although maybe one of these days I'll do marriages, we'll see. But you also do other things which are very interesting, and something that I'm interested in is what, of course, your program is about, and that stems from work that you do in management and what have you, focusing on spirituality within the entertainment industry. And I, of course, have got a background in the music industry, so this is interesting. Tell us a little bit about that work and you know, how your work as a manager, etc., is different from what most people do in this industry.
Mine is different because I'm considered to be a progressive talent manager with a focus on consciousness. And as far as I know, I'm the only one on the planet, and if I have my say, I won't be the last. And what I do is I use Hollywood to raise consciousness. And as I mentor and coach my own talent, my clients, I bring them back to their divinity so that they know who they are. And when they go out there and work in the entertainment industry, they're being much more discerning about what messages they are actually putting out. And they are being the God that they are in the roles that they're playing, which actually is offers a healing to anybody watching them on stage or screen. And I believe that actors are just as important as a priest or a rabbi or a minister, because the more truthfully they play their emotions for us on the screen, the more in touch with our own emotions we can become. So they are basically, every actor has their own ministry in that way. And they're being of a great value and great service to all of us. I mean, just think of the movies that have changed your life, or the TV shows, or the plays that we've seen that can just be that moment of clarity for us and bring us that wonderful, delightful message that we were waiting for at just the right time. So I consider it a great honor to be a mentor to my clients, and that's basically why I love to be a talent manager. I believe that Hollywood is our greatest communication medium that we have, because a message can go around the planet in a split second. And if it's the right message, like The Secret, let's say, look what that did. And that's only just the beginning. I'm intending to have a television network called Authentic TV, All Good News All the Time, where we have programming that is highly entertaining and inspiring without being didactic at all. And it's going to be the kind of programming people can't look away from, because it speaks to their knower, and our knower knows the truth. And that's the God that we are.
So you are located in Hollywood. When did you go to Hollywood? I'm taking it you're from Arizona, correct?
No, I was born in Detroit, Michigan, and I was raised all over the country. I went to 13 different grade schools before fourth grade, and grew up on a farm in Kentucky for most of the time with no running water. And if we didn't grow it or make it, we didn't have it. And winters were very difficult. I ran through the hills with the dogs and really communed with nature. I sat in a hollow tree and explored why it was I was here and why I chose that family and you know, what was my mission here. And I went to that hollow tree until I grew too big to fit inside of it.
Aww.
And that was my womb. That was my incubator. And I just really, really got in touch with my own true nature very early on. And nobody understood me, because here I am practically being a child prophet, spouting things to people who didn't want to hear it, who didn't have the ears for it. But a channeler told me many years ago that I came into that family to be the catalyst to their transformation, but they did not yet have the ears for it, and one day they would. And I'm writing several books at the same time right now because they're just coming through me at the speed of love. One book is called No Sex in the City, which is about higher frequency sacred partnership. And, you know, by the time you merge your bodies after you know someone well enough, then it's just through prayer you are merging your bodies to raise the frequency on the planet. And that's the way I believe we are headed. There's a real need for that right now. When I speak to women's groups and couples and in my coaching and I share this, people are starving for a higher frequency kind of sacred partnership because, you know, love is, it's you know, we're moving out of the human animal stage into the human spirit stage.
Thank goodness.
Yes, it's time. And I'm also writing a book called, with my boyfriend John, who is the publicist for The Secret, Transforming Hell is the name of that book, and it's to end all child abuse. And another book is The End of the Anonymous Actor, Changing Your Life Story Forever, which is a journey to the self through interviews with Neil Donald Walsh, James Redfield, you know, all of our spiritual rock stars of the day. I've already interviewed all of them. And also my nearly three decades of experience in the entertainment industry will be in that book. And the approach that I have to the entertainment industry for anybody who really wants to plant really solid roots and have a very firm foundation rather than just be a flash in the pan, you really need to start from getting in touch with the God that you are. That's my opinion. And apparently I'm not the only one who has that opinion because I'm also a Quantum Leap life coach and coached many, many, many people in the entertainment industry. So by the time we're finished with our two sessions, they are back to their divinity and going out into the world and being the God that they are everywhere they go and inspiring others to do the same. So it's nothing we can do is too small, nothing. And another book I'm writing is called Huckleberry Memoirs, which are memoirs of my childhood and how and just the difficulties of being an indigo child born to an atheist family and the abuse that I suffered because of that. But I did choose it before birth, and it's very much written around the fact that I chose every experience. I chose every socioeconomic experience that I would have. I chose every harsh thing that anyone would ever say or do to me because sitting around that table with the elders pre-birth, I had to make sure that these people agreed to have their hearts go blind when they came to physical form to be in my life so that they could teach me forgiveness. And I'm still learning that. So that's why, you know, my mother gave up every bit of her happiness in her lifetime to teach me forgiveness.
That's a really, really good point you're making there, too, because there is a lot of blindness and a lot of fear, and it is so important to lovingly set an example.
Yes, and if you don't mind if I give the website to the book, please. Huckleberry Memoirs, I think people will be very surprised by what they find there. Okay. It's www.huckleberry memoirs.com. HuckleberryMemoirs.com, no spaces in between those words. HuckleberryMemoirs.com. And if you go there and you read, you know, I have three sample chapters there that are not what you'll expect. I would love to hear from anyone who takes a look at that and get their feedback on what more they would like to know, because the book is still being written and I can add things as people have a need for it.
Sure. Very good. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this management work that that you are doing now, do you work with a client for a long period of time, or do you basically just coach the individual, or are you an actual manager?
I'm an actual talent manager, and I was a talent agent, and I was an actress for 15 years, and
uh-huh. Okay.
I was the manager of my son, who is... he was on Home Improvement for three seasons as the character Ronnie, the little gothic kid who wore a dog collar.
And I've got to admit my ignorance. I've got no idea what that is.
I know
that's okay.
Some of the listeners know who that is, and they probably remember my son.
In America, yes.
Yes, and he's had a very illustrious acting career since age three. He begged to be an actor, and I told him, I said, I will only let you be an actor if you do these three things. That is, take direction, make eye contact, and enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, the deal's off. if you've got to have fun or it's over. You can't do it. So he did it as long as it was fun, and then when it stopped being fun, he shifted to music, and he's now playing shows all over Los Angeles as an acoustic artist who writes his own lyrics and composes his own music, and it's such heartfelt, beautiful music, and
wow. So
commercial-friendly that he's about to become very well-known, and I'm very proud of him. He'll be 25 on January 19th, and I raised him as a single mom, and that's how I learned to work the business as an actress. I didn't have the luxury to be afraid. I had to just really get out there, jump right in, and be fearless to get the jobs that I got to keep the lights turned on and the food on the table.
Sure. And was that in Southern California? Or
yes, that was first in San Diego, and then I moved to Hollywood. And an accident on a commercial set where I was being the principal on a commercial, I got injured, got hit between the shoulders with 35 pounds of lead, and that story is also in HuckleberryMemoirs.com. It's called They Said I'd Be Paralyzed in 2 Years, which I am not, and I did spiritual warfare on that and healed myself. And if anybody wants to go and see how I did that, you might like what you find there. So that changed my career, and I became a manager, and then I became an agent, and then I became a manager again, and I belong to several organizations. I'm just about to launch a new TV show called Return to Greatness, which is about quantum hypnotherapy on public access TV in Los Angeles, and just doing all kinds of things to raise consciousness anywhere that I can, and No Sex in the City will also be a show that we have on public access for Los Angeles, because I believe it's a movement that it's timely. It's very timely because people are suffering out there around relationships, and we really don't need to, because the true relationship, that one we've always been looking for, is not outside of us. It's inside of us, and it's the God that we are.
Exactly, and it's a heart-mind connection, too. And one thing that I like to point out is that, one doesn't really need sex in order to have a very deep bond or connection with another person.
So. No, not at all. But when you do get to the place where you merge your bodies, if you do it with an intention and a distinction of raising the frequency of the planet and just invoke prayer together and just speak out loud to one another, just whisper to each other the prayer and just go forth with that intention, honestly, it makes a difference. We are all energy. Everything is energy. And when you come together in that kind of expression, that is sacred partnership.
Well, that's very, very beautiful, and it's worth noting that as well.
Well, we have to be extremely unreasonable to get there.
Well, it's important for people to pay attention and to approach all of this with an attitude of reverence.
Yes, totally. You're honoring the God in the other person.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, is a beautiful part of sacred partnership. So, I'm living that today. I have it. I have it, and I'm if there was such a thing as happiness overload, I would be having that.
Well, that is really wonderful. We've just got 1 minute left, Katie. Do you have any announcements, anything that you would like to share with our audience before we sign off?
Well, I just want to thank you, Juliet, for the wonderful work that you're doing, and to tell you that you occur to me as a wonderful light worker and a very conscious being. And I want you to know that if there's any suffering in your life whatsoever, that at this very moment it is over forever.
Well, bless you. Thank you. Now, do you have another website about your talent work?
Thank you. It's www.guardianangelmanagement.com. That's all spelled out, no spaces, guardianangelmanagement.com. And another way to get to all my places is to just Google Katie Romero.
Okay. Yes, you're like me. You've got a number of websites, and
yes,
people just pop your name into the Google.
Oh, it's pack a lunch when you start looking, because there's a lot of information, and it's only the beginning. I intend to just make a difference anywhere that I can, which some people need to be in a celebrity status, and that's not any ego attachment at all, period. It's some people need to be put in the limelight so that they can get their message out.
It's because part of the work, exactly.
Yes, so it's important on that level.
Yes.
And by no means do I want to be a big star. I just want to make a difference, and I want to vibrate at the frequency of God at all times.
Well, so do I, my dear. This has been wonderful. It's been wonderful having you with us. And next week, we're going to have someone on our show talking about after-death communications and also if anybody listening has had an after-death communication that is verifiable, that they would like to share, we're going to be speaking with Josie Varga, and her website is Josie Varga, V as in victory, A-R-G-A, Varga, josievarga.com. We're going to be talking about after-death communications, and this will be a very, very interesting show. You have been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Looking forward to speaking with you next week. Love and light to all of you. Blessings.